This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Ron Taylor is the education specialist with Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District, and we check in with him on occasion to find out what's happening with recycling in Porter County. And he is joining us today from Valparaiso area to give us the latest. Ron, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
One of the things I know that people have, sometimes I'm sure you get these questions, maybe not as much now if they're trying to call the office, but I'm sure you get them online, is people that want to know how to handle recyclables in Porter County. First, if you will, bring us up to date with how the city of Valparaiso handles their recyclables and how the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District sets up the drop-off sites.
Well, the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District recently opened a drop-off recycling site at the Valparaiso compost site, and that is for items that would typically go in your curbside bin. So most people with their waste hauler, they have an agreement that waste haulers are typically obligated to take curbside recyclables. These are your classic single stream blue bins that you put, yogurt cups, plastic bottles, different types of cans you can put in there. And those are all picked up by your waste hauler. If for some reason you can't make use of that, or if you have too much of those drop-off recyclables, then we offer the drop-off locations where you can take them. We have receptacles at locations like the Valparaiso compost site, where you can go ahead and bring your drop-off recyclables to that location as well.
Mm-hmm. How long has the drop-off site there at the compost site been in operation?
That one was just opened up this year, where you can actually take. It was moved. It was previously located at the Strack in Valparaiso, but it was moved to the compost site location.
I know there has been an issue in the past with contamination in the drop-off sites, and I think that was one of the reason why I know that the site at Strax there behind the store there in Valparaiso had to be closed, because there just was too much stuff that was not supposed to be recyclable that ended up in the recycling bin. So the hopes that having it there at the compost site will get better control over it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's always the hope. We try to do as much as we possibly can to educate people about the importance of recycling, right? There's something called wish cycling that people sometimes do. They think that absolutely anything can go in your curbside bin, or anything can go at the drop-off site. And unfortunately, there is a somewhat narrow list of items that can be accepted for curbside recycling. So we always have to be vigilant, knowing exactly what is and is not recyclable and exactly how your recyclables need to go into the curbside bin. For example, you need to clean out any, if you've got jars, if you've got cans, you need to clean out any food residue. That's a major source of contamination. So we really try to encourage as much as we can people to look at the resources on our website, portercountyrecycling.org, to help tell people exactly what can and can't go into those curbside recycling bins or drop-off recycling receptacles. Plastic bags are another issue. Some people, unfortunately, think that plastic bags can go in drop-off sites or curbside recycling, and that is not the case. There are special locations throughout the county where you have to take your plastic bags, and fortunately, we've just opened one of those at the Valparaiso compost site, so you can take your plastic bags to the Valparaiso compost site as well.
That's great. I know that there are certain conditions that you can recycle plastic bags, and you mentioned about the fact that there are special locations like the supermarkets around Porter County that have the boxes available or bins of some type available to be able to put those plastic bags in. What are some of the things, if you do want to drop off plastic bags, say at the compost site, or some of the other locations that are around, what do you have to do to make sure that those bags are acceptable?
Well, the main thing is that they need to be clean and dry, no residue of any kind in them. Another important thing, sometimes we get questions about de-icing salt bags,
right,
or water softener salt bags. Those are not accepted just because of the chemical residues that they can contain. Typically we're talking about your grocery bags, even things like bubble wrap, the film wraps that come around packing items, those kinds of plastic wraps. Even things like sandwich bags can be accepted. There's a lot of different types of plastic wraps and plastic bags that can be accepted. And there's a really terrific website, plasticfilmrecycling.org, that breaks down exactly which types of bags and wraps can and cannot be brought to these special locations. So we encourage people to check that out. But typically when you're talking about grocery bags, the main thing is clean and dry.
Has that been the real problem that you all in Porter County have noticed that over time, and I know there actually was a study that was done not long ago between the Recycling and Waste Reduction District and Valparaiso University to study the plastic pollution that exists in the county. And that was one of the things I know that had been mentioned was the fact that there are an awful lot of plastic bags that get out there and get dumped alongside the roads or in ditches or wherever it may happen to be. And these are bags, obviously, that if they're not been eaten, have food in them, they can be cleaned out or at least clean. They could be recycled or reused someplace.
Yes, absolutely. Microplastics, plastic pollution is a huge problem everywhere, and unfortunately, Porter County is no exception. Those plastics, when they get in the environment, they don't biodegrade. They break down into smaller and smaller little pieces of plastic. They don't biodegrade like the organic materials or even something like paper will do. Plastic bags, they turn into tinier and tinier little bits of plastic that contaminates the air, contaminates the water, gets into the soil. You alluded to Dr. Julie Peller's research that's demonstrated we do have those microplastics in the soil like pretty much everywhere else. So definitely we want to encourage proper recycling of the plastic bags wherever possible. And we also want to encourage people to use as few as possible to begin with.
I know, you want to try to even go to cloth, actually, if you use reusable cloth bags for your shopping purposes.
Exactly. So cloth bags are a terrific option. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, some stores had prohibited the use of people bringing their own cloth bags. So like when they go grocery shopping, they'll bring their own cloth bag instead of getting a plastic bag at the checkout line. One workaround for that, if your grocery store is not allowing cloth bags, you can simply put your groceries in your cart at the checkout line and take them out to your car and then put them in your cloth bags that you have in your car. So that's a potential workaround if your store is not letting you use a cloth bag. But we always encourage cloth bags. Reducing is always the first line of defense that we try to promote in cutting down on plastic pollution. So using less plastic in the first place is always our best option.
Do you also see the opportunity, if it's there, to use paper sacks? That, of course, was the first bag that you used to put groceries in until plastic came about.
Yeah, paper is definitely a better option long-term just because it can biodegrade. Paper is your next best option, more so than plastic.
We mentioned about the services that are available for Porter County residents for the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District's composting site in Valparaiso. And there are other options for other recyclables that can go out there. If you'll talk about those, the first one talking about recycling electronic items.
Yes. So pretty much anything that has a cord or batteries, a wide number of different types of gadgets, devices. We're talking about things like computers, TVs, computer monitors, VCRs, DVD players. I mean, any old electronics like that that you may have, after the holidays, if you need to get rid of the old electronics because you've got new ones, we accept those at the Valparaiso compost site. That's one of our electronics recycling locations. Batteries as well. That's another location that you can take used batteries. Mm-hmm. So it's a really terrific service that we hope people can avail themselves of. It's actually against the law to dispose of those types of electronics in the trash can if you have any way to recycle them. We definitely want to encourage people to make use of the Valparaiso compost site for electronics recycling. A couple of big exceptions, no large appliances and nothing containing Freon, so dehumidifiers or refrigerators have to go to Metro Recycling, which is actually across the street from the Valparaiso compost site at 2150 West Lincoln Way. So that's a very convenient option if you have items with Freon, is Metro Recycling.
That's great. That's great. One other area that we talk about occasionally, and maybe you don't think about now because it's winter months, but is about hazardous materials maybe that you have around the house or in the garage. Tell us, if you will, first off, about the importance of household hazardous waste disposal and what's coming up with the Recycling and Waste Reduction District for the events in 2021.
So, yes, it's very critically important when you're talking about cleaners, solvents, antifreeze, all the different types of household cleaners, maybe automotive supplies, any potentially dangerous chemicals. We don't want to just throw those in the trash. We don't want to just pour those down the drain. Those can cause a lot of problems if they get into the soil, leach into the water table. All those different types of chemicals are not something that we want exposed into the environment. So that's why every spring and summer we host a number of household hazardous waste collection events throughout Porter County. We will be publishing our calendar for those very shortly. Mm-hmm. So offer a very convenient option for Porter County residents to bring those household hazardous waste items to be properly disposed of.
Does the district have a company that comes in and helps set up the household hazardous waste collection dates and take care of the material?
Yes, anyone who's if you ever come to the household hazardous waste events, you'll see a lot of workers processing the items, sorting them, deciding what's in them. There's a company called Tredebi that manages the processing of those chemicals, so they figure out what's in the particular chemical that you've brought and what's the safe way to dispose of them. They sort them and then ship them and process them according to the chemical composition of what you bring. So Tredebi Environmental Services is the company that has really been instrumental in helping us with that.
Now, looking back to this past year, although I know we were still in the midst of the pandemic, you were able to at least get some of the household hazardous waste collection sites out there available. What special precautions did you all have to take this past year in the events, and will they probably have to carry much into 2021?
From what we can tell now, they probably will. Fortunately, those are primarily outdoor events, so these are drive-up events. People bring the items in their car. They pop their trunk or open up their vehicle, and then the workers come and get the items out for them. So there's very little person-to-person contact, and it is in a big outdoor area. So, the ventilation is very critical as far as COVID precautions. So, obviously all our workers, all of our staff, we're wearing masks. We're maintaining a healthy distance, a six-foot distance when workers have to interact with the public, and it's all outdoors. So fortunately, household hazardous waste events. At the beginning of the spring, they did have to be postponed just because, COVID had just sort of hit. But fortunately, we found that it is not a problem to run these events in a way that maximizes safety for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm. That was probably also during the time when we had the stay-at-home mandates where you basically had to stay at home and you couldn't go out any more than you absolutely had to. So this wasn't exactly on the list of things you could take care of at the time, but it's nice to know that at least that the services is available. It's been back, and there are more planned for 2021. What kind of response do you get from residents that have stopped by the not only the drop-off site, but also the household hazardous waste collection facilities that are set up? There are those drop-off locations during the year.
Well, we're really happy with the response that we get from the community. People want to recycle right. We've gotten a lot of compliments, particularly on how well the household hazardous waste events in 2020 had been organized, and that's definitely what we love to hear. And as I said, people want to do the right thing as far as recycling. People are very engaged with the message that we have. It's just a matter of getting the information out there through channels like this, promoting it to people so that we make the options as convenient as possible. Recycling is, unfortunately, can be a very confusing thing. You've got all these different types of materials, all these different types of drop-off locations and processes that they have to go into. So whatever we can do to streamline that process is really what we strive for.
Well, Ron, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about the issues that folks in Porter County can take care of, they should take care of when they're recycling materials. And they can always go on the Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District website. And we hope to have you back again. When the weather's warmer, we'll talk about some of the events coming up again. Thank you very much today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ron Taylor is with Porter County Recycling and Waste Reduction District. And you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Parents Overcoming Electronics is an organization that focuses on raising awareness about tech addiction in children. But they're dealing with, of course, the pandemic these days and some great changes that have caused even more problems for some families. And to tell us more about what the organization is doing to help family members and youngsters to better deal with the addiction problem with technology during the pandemic, we have the founder of Parents Overcoming Electronics, Joshua Andrus, with us. And Joshua, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, briefly tell us a little bit about how you got the organization started, the main goal that you have, but how the COVID-19 pandemic seems to have changed everything.
Yeah, so originally, and like most problems that we tried to solve, there was a personal problem. My kids were getting too hooked to electronics. I talked to a lot of the friends that I have in the community, and really, too many people don't know a whole lot about addiction, don't know how deep their kids were into it. And so I decided to start writing kids' books to see if we could get this to, you know, elementary school kids, primary school kids, to see if we could kind of have a little bit of an intervention or a pattern break. And everything's kind of taken off from there.
You've come up with a series of books for children that help try to help them understand, I guess, in more detail about the challenges they're facing if they haven't heard it already from other people, from other adults, the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. But how do they help deal with the issue in particular because we're so tied so closely now to technology?
Yeah, so the fun thing about the books is that a parent reading it to a child is going to gain probably as much insight as the child. Because there's some things that we kind of cross over when we're interacting with our devices that we don't realize are really impacting us. It's kind of the idea that if you eat, you know, too many Big Macs a day, you might not see the difference in the beginning, but you see them over time. There's a lot of those subtle things that we're crossing over with the electronics. And so I think the biggest way is that a child will be able to see some funny ways that they're interacting with their devices in our books. They're all nursery rhyme, and so it keeps them engaged. And parents can even see some of the ways that they might be interacting, and in the end, they all kind of pull it together and make sense. So those are kind of the fun part of the intervention of the book itself.
Mm-hmm. Is it a matter of basically having to make sure that everybody, including young people, understand the values of growing up and how that the pandemic might make some changes, but it's not going to change everything forever?
The pandemic, and I haven't touched on that because yet, but yeah, so what happens now is that we have kids that are staying home from school and on their screens a ton because it's what's required for school classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were starting to see some of this. Some of the schools were integrating the computers, the laptops, and high schools mostly had that. A lot of the elementary schools about around where we live. The thing is that was not just the only thing they were interacting with. We're now, they're doing PE classes on their devices, you know, or what I like to see sometimes, or I think was humorous, is the upper body so that at least looks like they're participating. So,
uh-huh.
You know, there's a lot of different impacts as a result of the pandemic. But I also like to look at it, and my book really focuses on the advantages. So, like, you know, this is a sentinel event. I say sentinel because it's something that has completely changed the way that people are going about their lives. It's impacted everyone. And it's life before it, and now life after it looks different. So our kids have all endured and are enduring that, and they're in that way, you know, resilient and are capable of enduring. So they're surviving this. What the title of the book is Thriving During COVID, and it talks about how kids are better prepared today to take, you know, online classes than any other generation we've had. It's because they've been steeped in this kind of technology. They've been around it their whole life. And so the focus of the book is really the advantages. We're you know, too much in time right now. We have a pretty comfortable way of living, and, you know, pandemic aside. And sometimes when we come up against a trial, we kind of think, oh, no, let's just give up or let's go around it. The book really focuses on what's the advantages of the trials that we're going through.
What kind of activities can young people get involved with their family members to help deal with the pandemic that you mentioned in your book?
A few things. The first thing is that in the book itself, the little boy, which is Gamer Gavin, it's inspired by my son Brayden, teaches his sister how to play catch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also stresses and emphasizes that family members can give hugs still. We're not, you know, we're not so socially distant. So there's that. There's being good community members. And so it talks about going to the store and being a little bit more patient and learning to smile with our eyes because our faces are covered. Smiling is a little different now. And And, you know, those kind of things, helping out with mom around the house, doing chores, seeing that, you know, this is difficult on everybody, but it opens up that empathy. One of the biggest things lost, Chris, with devices is that empathic development. There's not as much and near nothing when you're playing a video game against somebody else you quote-unquote call a friend. The empathy is being lost with electronics, and that starts even with our parents losing that with their children.
Are we finding that the pandemic has not really changed in some respects how kids can interact with their parents and with grown-ups in general? We do know that there's a big problem now, is obviously with social distancing, having to wear masks, and all of the things we have to do to stay healthy. It's maybe hasn't really changed all that much. There are some other activities that maybe young people have to face in life that if they can endure through this, they'll be able to endure anything.
I think the idea is that. I think it's not the norm, though. I work in the field of addiction. I work in the field of therapy. The numbers for mental health has, like, gone through the roof. The access to care is terrible. That speaks to social connections not being made. So that's a direct impact. I really would wish that, or hope that that would be the case. I'm really hoping that, you know, that the person that picks up the book is impacted that way, Chris. But I don't mean to be a pessimist. I say it has a lot more effect than we really even are noticing or will notice. It's got long-standing effects. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, if you could look at the number of increases, I don't have them right in front of me, but for mental health cases from this, and that ends up being a family impact through and through. Even if it's not our kids that are impacted, it's our adults. So I wish it was less. And again, the focus of the book is to help, like you said, like when they can see themselves as a survivor, that helps to build the building blocks of future coping strategies. But I hate to say it, it's been a negative impact through and through.
Have you noticed in any feedback that you might have received since the book series have been out about how parents and as well as young people are dealing with this? Any suggestions that you're going to perhaps put together in a future book?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I intentionally made it so it was thriving during and beyond. It even talks about how sports and amusement parks had been shut down, and the rhyme says, you know, may make you feel a little bit blue. But seeing through that, now, I think one thing that we can really gain, and you might see it across the social media, when I've been on the news channels quite a bit, then they've focused in on this, but the engagement with our kids when we can, like, that has probably been, or the awareness, you know, this is the reason I've been featured on, like, pretty much every single day in December, I had an interview because the awareness is there, Chris. There's the idea that, you know, parents really are concerned now. They get to see their kids and the negative impact, and they want suggestions. So, you know, very specifically, I would say that there's more opportunity to engage. If we can't go outside in California, I know you guys are in Indiana. We've had stay-at-home orders and businesses closed down, and then the holidays, you know, like we're, you know, people are in house. They don't have as many of the family members traveling to visit. I think the board games, pulling out an engaging board game and getting our kids that, a lot of the times when they're using their devices, they're trying to fill a void with electronics. But engaging them with board games if you're inside the house. It's not about just turning on the TV or letting them go into their corners and enjoying or their rooms and enjoying, like, you know, binge watching. It's about, you know, hey, guys, we're going to family time, mandatory family time or whatever it is. Hey, would you guys want to come and, you know, play a game of Monopoly? You know, there's plenty of time to do that for some families now. And so I'd say that. I think the other thing is when it's allowed to go out, I think the important thing is to look at, you know, do we go for the hikes? Do we go for the, you know, we live out here on the coast. I can tell you that there was some indication that, like, a lot of the outdoor activities were being done. And in the summertime, you couldn't buy a slip and slide, for example. You couldn't find a kayak paddle in the area because everybody was out there enjoying the great outdoors, which was safe. It was further than 6 feet away. So I would say, you know, those kind of activities, those will impact our kids for years to come. Highly engaging.
Now, if anybody's interested in finding out more about the book series, how can they find out more, Joshua?
They can actually go to my Amazon author page, or they can get 2 free downloads just because they've heard this on your show by going to theparentsovercomingelectronics.com. They can get the one for COVID and then also one about kids that stay up too late on their devices and take school for granted. The Amazon page is just amazon.com/author/Joshua Andrus.
Joshua Andrus is an addiction specialist. He is the creator of an organization called Parents Overcoming Electronics, trying to help young people deal with tech addiction. And it's especially important now because tech is the only way that young people may have to communicate with teachers and other adults during the pandemic. Thanks for being with us to talk about it.
Awesome.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The pandemic has caused a lot of problems for many, many people, and particularly aging adults. And to find out at least how we can deal with the problem and the efforts that are out there for caregivers to do the best they can during the pandemic to help the aged here in Northwest Indiana, we have with us Sandy Haywood. She's in charge of the local office of Home Instead. And thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, if you will, first give us an idea about all of the issues that you and your colleagues there at Home Instead have had to deal with here since this first shutdowns last year and even continuing on into today as the pandemic continues.
Sure. Well, you know, the nation's unemployment rate is at the highest in nearly half a century. You know, job opportunities in industries such as retail and dining are disappearing. More and more people are choosing to stay at home. With the pandemic, people want to be in their own home. Our population is aging, and people need more care, choosing to be in their own home.
Is it a matter where people staying at home, obviously, if they're hopefully they're well, that they are not contracted coronavirus or any related illnesses, but they probably just want to stay at home rather than have to be in some type of established care facility?
Sure. You know, in some cases, they're cautious. They're afraid to be in a community. I know that many families I've spoken to, it's concerning to them because they're not allowed to visit. They're not allowed to see their loved ones. Mm-hmm. So it's very stressful.
Do you find these are some of the major concerns, or are they're just afraid they don't want to catch the virus, obviously, and their loved ones maybe are a little concerned too because they may possibly, maybe not from their loved ones, but certainly other people that might be in a facility like that would happen to have it?
Sure. Well, there are most vulnerable people in our community, so that is a concern. Limiting who comes to their home is something they can control, and they feel safer.
Tell us, if you will, using Home Instead as your own example, obviously, what a caregiver does for someone who is not able to take care of oneself but likes to have some freedom but maybe needs a little assistance.
Sure. From assisting with personal care and preparing meals to running errands and providing companionship, caregivers help seniors with simple tasks that enable them to remain safely in their homes.
What other chores that they do or assistance can they give that they're allowed to give, I should say, maybe in some cases, that maybe somebody might ask for?
Sure. Well, we can work with people with dementia. Sometimes it's safety supervision. Companionship, you know, with the pandemic, people are isolated. So sometimes companionship, seeing somebody, somebody with a warm heart and a big smile, makes a senior's day. Mm-hmm. But we can do light housekeeping. We can do laundry. We can help with personal care. So we can help them bathe. We can help them get dressed. Personal care needs are something, and household chores are something we can do, as well as errands mm-hmm. and appointments.
Can you give us an example or two of some instances where some of your caregivers have really been able to help out, or maybe they've been able to prevent some real serious problems for some of the people they take care of?
Sure. Our caregivers are frontline workers, so sometimes it could be because we are considered to be able to go into facilities, we can go visit with people.
Right.
We can go into their homes and maybe notice maybe they're not taking medicines, they're not eating, they're not feeling well. Maybe they need a doctor's appointment. We have families that live far away who maybe are ill or isolating themselves who just can't get out to visit their senior. And because we're essential workers, you know, we can. But those are times that our caregivers play a key role in keeping somebody safe and letting families know if there's a health concern, a change in behavior with their family, something that needs to be addressed.
Now, Home Instead is based here in Northwest Indiana. It must be expanding, I guess, with all these folks that need help and would like to be able to stay at home and have somebody help them out as caregivers. How many people do you have on staff right now, and are you looking for more people?
Sure. So, you know, we have been providing care to seniors here in Northwest Indiana for close to 18 years. We have a large caregiving staff, but we are definitely looking to expand because the need is there. People want to be at home, and we are looking to hire at least 20 people right now, and more throughout this year. We need people to work daytime shifts, overnight shifts, weekends, weekdays.
It just sounds like it's just about, for some people, a moment. It is literally a full-time job, I suppose, for some, or could be, I suppose.
It can be, and the hours are flexible. We work around their schedule. We understand that people have families, maybe children who are e-learning at home, and so we work with them to provide flexible schedules.
When you ask for help like this, is it going to be on a regular basis? That is, with the luck that the vaccine might will provide an end to the pandemic sometime in the future, that you're going to continue to have these folks help out?
Sure. I mean, in the midst of the COVID-19, it's a rapidly growing industry, and we see it ongoing even after the pandemic.
What might be the qualifications, if you want to call them that, the assets that a person would have that would make them a good caregiver, and in turn why they might be participating in your organization?
Sure. I mean, at the heart of this position is the relationship between the caregiver and the senior. Caregivers should have a big heart, a kind soul, and organizational skills. There really are no special requirements to become a Home Instead caregiver. And any new caregivers will receive training to prepare them, you know, for success with our clients.
Well, if anybody listening to our conversation might be interested, who should they get hold of? How can they find out more information about these jobs that are going to be available?
Sure. They can actually call our office. Our number is 219-793-9023. They can ask for Emily, our recruitment and engagement coordinator. They can also go online to homeinstead.com/careers to learn more about working with Home Instead as well as applying for full or part-time positions.
Let me ask, how many folks that are working in the staff right now have had these opportunities come up and they found out about these by going to the website or giving you guys a call?
Yeah, we are getting inquiries, you know, every day. We do get a lot of them. Home Instead is a worldwide company, and people are exploring this wonderful opportunity to be a professional caregiver.
Well, Sandy, thank you very much for spending time with us to talk about your organization that you're part of, Home Instead, about the need for caregivers, not only during the pandemic, but beyond as well, we hope, for seniors that need a little extra help in living. They don't want to live in a structured facility someplace else. They want to live at home. And we appreciate finding out about this today.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.